Today's episode of the Walking Dead Feedback Show is sponsored by TrueCar. Now, there's something about TrueCar a lot of people don't know. Using TrueCar can also help you buy a used car. In fact, there's over 700,000 pre-owned vehicles available from TrueCar certified dealers nationwide. Whether you're looking to buy new or used, you can get upfront pricing information that empowers, kind of like how Father Gabriel felt so empowered that he took on those garbage people. You'll see discounts off the list price for used cars and a better buying experience through our TrueCar certified dealer network. Because with TrueCar, you can connect to a local certified dealer you're choosing so you can enjoy a quick, easy car buying experience and see what other people are paying for the same exact car that you're looking for down to your zip code. Using TrueCar, you can easily find that new or used car that you want. So when you're ready to buy a new or used car, visit TrueCar to enjoy a more confident car buying experience. Some features not available in all states. Walking Dead, Season 7, Episode 10, New Best Friends is over, but we're just getting started taking your feedback here on the Walking Dead Feedback Show. And now, here are the two guys who are never down in the dumps, unlike the New Best Friends. I'm Rob Sestrino, here's Josh Wigler. Josh, how are you?
Don't you mean down, down, down in the dumps?
Down, down, down. Wow, Josh.
Oh, my gosh.
I'm so excited to talk to you about this episode. Of course,
are you really?
I am.
Actually, you are? Okay, cool.
I'm excited
I'm
to get your take on it. Alex and I, of course, we had a fun night on Sunday night. We watched the episode, and then we came in here and podcast about it.
Alex Kibble, underreported story, your new best friend. Now that he's California local, you guys are having screening parties together. I feel very left out.
It's hard because I don't want to waste any jokes during the watching of the podcast we watched
like Jadis Pinkett Smith.
Right, right. Although that was good that I forgot to say it during the podcast, because then I don't want to force him to like laugh again the second time that, who knows if it was even really funny the first time. So I don't like recycling material.
Yeah, no, that as your friendship develops, he's going to be a lot more comfortable at laughing the second time. It took me a little while too to start laughing at your jokes twice.
Got there.
But I got there. I think Alex will get there.
Okay, so here we are, of course, that you could not be with us Sunday night. What were you with your lovely wife Emily's birthday?
Yeah, I was, which was preferable to spending an hour and a half in a junkyard.
Oh, so you were down on it. See, I feel like that reading the comments on postshowrecaps.com, some people were on my case about how I was too down on the episode. And a couple of people on Twitter also said, like, boy, you're really down on The Walking Dead. And I said, I tried to reiterate, I like the stuff with the kingdom in the beginning and certainly the end of the episode, the stuff with Daryl and Carol I thought was really great. But no, I wasn't really feeling the garbage people.
Isn't it just incredible, though, that like the biggest controversy from season 6 was Glenn hiding underneath a dumpster and Walking Dead more than a year later decides it's a good idea to go back to the trash heap. I mean, like, what's going on in the writer's room where they think that that's a good idea? Just kind of blows my mind that they would have the audacity to go back to trash. And it clearly they did not stick the landing with a lot of people.
Rick did when they threw him down from up, up, up.
I don't know if he stuck the landing. I mean, he got stuck somewhere after the landing. His hand got stuck on Winslow's face. But I don't know. It was weird as hell. The trash people, the garbage people, which I think is a very appropriate name for these people. It's an odd choice, not from the comics. This is brand new for the show. I do like it when Walking Dead at least tries to do something really different. I would rather them try and fail in shaking it up than just doing exactly what they always do. So I think that there was, there's something admirable about the ambition of it. I kind of admire the cojones it takes to go back to trash after season 6. I think the execution was botched. And these are weird people to have in the universe of The Walking Dead right now, but I'm sure we'll dive into that.
So what you're saying is that you didn't like it?
Rhetorical!
I'll I'll say that I liked it more than I liked some of the first, you know, the first half of the season. Like, I definitely liked it more than some of those episodes from the front half of season 7. I still think that there's levity here. I think that I will always prefer, like, a lighter bad Walking Dead than, like, a grim and gritty bad Walking Dead. So I don't think that it was a very good episode of television, but it had moments that were kind of fun. Rick, like, barely, you know, containing his laughter at the sight of all these garbage people was kind of incredible.
I don't think that's what he was laughing at.
I know, but I choose to interpret it that way. You know, if it's a little bit unnecessary, I know that you and Alex likened it to kind of like a Star Trek episode, and everything with like the rancor pit of it all, of throwing Rick in with Winslow, is a bit contrived, but at least it was different. Haven't seen a walker like that on this show ever. That felt like something that was, you know, more out of Silent Hill or Resident Evil. Like, it seemed like a video game zombie, not a Walking Dead zombie. So it was weird. It was strange. It was swinging for something. I think it whiffed, but I'm glad it took a swing at that pitch, because I think at the very least, if they're trying to have fun and they're trying to do something different, that's better than just being boring and bleak. Still not great, but preferable to that for me.
And I did hear from some people on Twitter that said they really did like this. They like that they're bringing in new people, that it's something different. It just,
they like Jadis.
Yeah. They like Jadis. Some people did really like this. So I know that you and I were not crazy about it, but I did hear from people. So I don't want to say universally. I think we could just say it was not our cup of tea. Or tea dog.
It's our cup of tea dog. The first question we had gotten for the feedback show this week was from Thomas, not tea dog, Thomas, who said, "Miss Josh on Sunday night. Wonder what he thinks about the swing in episode quality from arguably one of the best episodes in the last few seasons the week before to the mess of this week. Don't know if mess is a pun because it is a garbage pile of an episode." But I mean, I do think I was very, very up on Rockin' the Road. I loved the mid-season premiere. I thought that that was great. And it's definitely a steep decline in quality of episode for me from that to this. Again, I'm still glad that there's, you know, a sense of joy and levity. But I think also if you go back and you listen to those podcasts, I was pretty clear of saying I love this episode. Would not shock me at all if Walking Dead just dips back in quality again the following week. I do think that's what happened. What are you going to do? It's The Walking Dead. We kind of expect this by now.
We kind of expect it by now, and we'll see where the roller coaster takes us next. I just want to mention, if you want to subscribe to our Walking Dead podcast, usually I say it at the end of the show, I just want to get it out front here, go to postshowrecaps.com/iTunes. We had a lot of new subscribers after the midseason premiere, so if you're looking for that link, go to postshowrecaps.com/TWD. iTunes. Josh, did you have a chance to watch The Talking Dead this week?
No, I didn't. I didn't get to watch The Talking Dead this week. I assume you did.
I did. And I have to say that The Talking Dead continues to be in a major slump. I believe, arguably, this might have been the weakest Talking Dead panel ever assembled.
Wow. Ever assembled. All right. Who was the panel? What went down?
So the panel was Seth Gilliam, a.k.a. Father Gabriel, then Cooper Andrews, who plays Jerry, who's great, who's great. No shade at Jerry. He was actually one of the high points in this. And then mystery cast member, not revealed during the episode, mystery cast member. And I said to Alex Kidwell during the commercial break, I said, you know what? I don't think anybody's dying tonight. I think this is the week that they throw somebody who didn't die out there, just so that on the week that somebody dies, they get to say, oh, see, it's not always somebody that dies.
Head games with The Talking Dead. They're always trying to mess with you.
But this is what they do. And of course, surprise cast member, Pollyanna McIntosh, who plays Jadis Pinkett Smith, was there. And Chris Hardwick literally said, and here's our surprise guest. It's Pollyanna McIntosh. See, it's not always somebody who dies.
Oh, my God. All right. So you don't point out the ruse when you've just pulled off a ruse, I feel like. I feel like that's the wrong move.
There were some funny moments. You know, Chris Hardwick really got very worked up when they showed a taped piece where Andrew Lincoln said that the fight versus Winslow was similar to something from Star Wars. Chris Hardwick was really bent out of shape. It wasn't Star Wars. It was Return of the Jedi.
That is such a nerdy nitpick. Really? Like, he took issue with the fact that Andrew Lincoln said Star Wars and not specifically Return of the Jedi?
Look, Chris Hardwick, when given the opportunity, is going to show you how much he knows about stuff.
Oh, listen, we are not allowed to throw those stones, Rob. We with our gig, not allowed to do that. Not allowed to say that.
No. Wasn't a dig. I'm just pointing it out.
Simpatico with Chris Hardwick on this one, whether we like it or not.
And so then later on, it was funny that when a person on Twitter mentioned that, well, maybe that he was referring to, they go into the garbage pit of the Death Star. And Chris Hardwick got very upset and said, that's not what he was talking about.
Well, so it's kind of like a combination of things then. Like, it's the Rancor pit from Return of the Jedi. it's the trash room from A New Hope. And Rick damages his hand, so there's a little bit of Empire Strikes Back in there.
It's all of it. It's all of it.
It's all old trilogy.
But Jerry was funny. He gave some good, like, succinct, funny answers to questions. And so he was good, Cooper Andrews. Seth Gilliam was complaining about how people go up to him in real life and complain about Father Gabriel.
Fair enough, man. How awful. Can you imagine how awful that must be to be Father Gabriel, the actor who plays him? It's like being, it's nowhere near, it can't be anywhere near as bad as, like, Jack Gleason as Joffrey. Like, that kind of thing, though, when you're playing just this person that nobody really likes on a very recognizable show, it's got to be hard to go to Starbucks.
I just felt like that my biggest complaint with The Talking Dead, besides from the week panel, was they spent the entire episode talking about the garbage dump. And I guess because you have Pollyanna McIntosh there, who played Jadis. But they barely touched on anything from The Kingdom, which I thought was the better part of the show. Like 45 minutes in, they mentioned the Daryl and Carol stuff.
Yeah, you were in on The Kingdom. You liked The Kingdom stuff.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. I mean, you have Daryl and Carol, two of the core four, getting back together. And I think that I wish they would have spent more time talking about that. But I guess you didn't have anybody there. Well, yeah, Jerry, who was there in The Kingdom. But
barely. He was barely there.
We'll make up for it. We'll make up for it. We'll talk about
that. Future Talking Deads, take note. Rob's not happy right now.
Yeah.
Not thrilled.
Don't tell me you have a surprise cast member and have it be Pollyanna McIntosh.
Oh, man, you're going to really regret these words when Jadis becomes the best character on the show in like 30 seasons from now.
Yeah, Chris Hardwick was really like hyping her up, like, so what is it like knowing that people are going to be going to conventions and dressing like you? I'm like, slow the roll, Chris. Like, I don't know if anybody's doing that yet.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know.
She's not exactly the second coming of Jerry.
She's got to make it past three episodes for that to be like a really legit costume. Also, like, if you're planning on a Walking Dead costume and you're going for the garbage people, like, there were so many other options you could have gone with first.
I just wonder, will we get into sort of like the bad Star Trek trope where it's like, oh, these are the garbage people. Like, oh, these people were in the orchestra and these are the instrument people. And like, are we just going to like uncover all of these new civilizations? Like, oh, these people were locked in an office and these are the office supply people.
Yeah. I mean, I think that to a certain extent, we've been hopping around all throughout this show with communities like that, you know, people that are huddled together because it was the convenient thing to do. The Vatos going back that far to season one. Or even, you know, everyone who was holed up on Herschel's farm. Or even if you want to say like the hospital in Atlanta with all the cops and everything like that. So it's not new that we're seeing like all these people rally around this one place. And there's just like this kind of bizarre theme that's threading it all together. But I do think that the garbage people takes the cake.
It does. And I think it's different than those things that you're talking about, because that, you know, the Vatos were just happened to be a gang who was together after the zombie apocalypse, or the people that were in the hospital were like cops and people that worked in a hospital, but they didn't like have some sort of like new religion and culture and language that was around being in a nursing home or being in a hospital. These are people who have evolved to something new based on the fact they live in the garbage dump.
I want to be careful about saying evolved, because that's a positive connotation. I don't know. Like, I don't know that they've evolved so much as they've regressed. You know, like, I feel like they like touched the mutant slime and something bad happened.
Yeah. Yeah, but that's where I feel like we're headed. You know, we're mutating to different things in different pockets.
Well, I think that, you know, this is a good lead into a question. We got a voicemail, actually. Thanks for your voicemails, everybody, this week. A voicemail we have from Tracy. It's a two-part voicemail, so we'll tackle the first part really quickly, and then the second part addresses what you're talking about here.
Hey, Josh and Rob, this is Tracy. Number one, I have two questions. So are we to believe that the garbage people, that was the person with the boots that we didn't really get a reveal of, that was the one that got Father Gabriel to get with them in the car? I'm assuming that's what we were supposed to believe.
Let's stop there super quick. Yeah, I think that that's it, right? Like, there wasn't one specific garbage person that needed to be revealed. The boots guy just represents the garbage people writ large.
So according to The Talking Dead, and again, this came up last season. I don't know how much of this is canon, but they do like a Walking Dead, like a pop-up video type thing where they show like behind the scenes facts, almost like some sort of like commentary on the episode. And what it said was, according to the script, the boots person was revealed to be Tamiel.
Oh, okay.
Who had that?
Wow.
Who had that? Tamiel, I believe that was the person that Father Gabriel took at knife point.
All right. So, I mean, we're giving Father Gabriel a lot of credit for, like, thinking on his feet, but it actually turns out that he had a lot of time to sit in the car with Tamiel and figure this person out.
Yeah. So he was thinking all about it, the Father and Tamiel. But my question is, why did we have this super sneaky reveal of who the boots person was? Unless the writers just wrote the episode and it's like, okay, we'll figure it out in the next half season when we come back. And there are TV shows that do that. But if you could have shown me the entire close-up of Tamiel, and I'm not going to know who that is, you know? So there was no point in hiding who that was based on their boots.
Yeah, but I think if you're just looking at the boots and you don't see the person's face, like, now you have a question to mull over throughout the off season.
But the answer is disappointing.
Of course it is. Of course it is.
Like, oh, it was a garbage person.
Yeah, of course. Of course the answer is dumpster. You know, that's just how it goes. Okay, well, that's one mystery solved. Let's continue with the rest of Tracy's question. It'll get us back to where we were before.
Father Gabriel to get with them in the car. I'm assuming that's what we were supposed to believe. And number two, I know you guys don't like to go too far into the comic books on this show, us to not ruin anything because things aren't always the same and all that. But I just feel like the show's getting really hokey now. There's a lot of gags that just don't need to be there, like the thing with the zombie with the swords all over its head and all that stuff.
Winslet.
It just seems like the show's doing a lot of gags now without a point to them, really. I'm just wondering if the comic books ever kind of got to this place where there was just a lot of fluff and they were just trying to fill in content and things just got so crazy and out of this world, like with the tiger and stuff. I feel like the first couple seasons were a little more real world. Like, the first season was so good with all the little things that they had to do to get from point A to point B and just to survive. And I know now it's more about human to human survival instead of against the walkers, but I don't know. I just feel like the show's getting hokey and it's kind of losing its way.
Well, so I think there's some interesting stuff to pick apart here.
Yeah. And first off, Winslow definitely had a point.
He had a lot of points.
He had several. They were all glued to his head. Yeah.
He's covered in points.
Covered in points.
Very pointy guy. Was that literally all that you had to say there?
Yeah.
It's great. Good. All right. I also had heard that joke before the podcast, so this is the second time that I'm laughing at it. I'm kidding. I think that there's some interesting stuff here, though. I mean, Rob, you and I, we just did a rewatch of season one of The Walking Dead. If you guys haven't listened to those podcasts, I think that they're very fun. We did that in the off season between halves of season seven. I think that that observation holds up. Like, the idea that Walking Dead was so much smaller back in the day, you know, it was really more about the day-to-day survival, and now it's fairly grand. And I think in terms of the question of, is this something that's just how it goes from the comics, even though the show and the comics really don't align very often, like, major beats can be consistent, but for the most part, they really do a lot of riffing on the show. The direction of the comics is, you know, trajectory wise, fairly similar here, that the world is expanding. The world is blowing up. There are more people out there than you realize. There may be more communities out there than you realized. And I do think that in exploring that, and I think that we've really started to see it this season, and now we are seeing it in an extremely extreme way with the garbage people, is that there is like some flourish to these people. There is a tiger. There is a place that's literally called the Kingdom and people who act like they are knights. Walking Dead, you know, you're getting a little bit of Game of Thrones in your Walking Dead right now. And I do think that that's kind of the trend. And if you're not going to be into that, you might not like The Walking Dead very much anymore. It's definitely going to take on a little bit more of an epic quality, and whether or not that suits people's fancy, you know, that's really going to be a subject to taste.
Yeah, and I don't mind that we are having a little bit more flair in the show, or that it's becoming, you know, increasingly unrealistic. I just feel like, okay, if you're going to take us there, just, you know, deliver on what you're doing. And I think that that's been the question at times.
All right, let's take another voicemail. Let's take this from our good buddy, Rich Filiberto, our Philly.
Love our Philly.
Our Philly had reached out to me earlier in the week and DM stormed me with his hot takes on this episode, was not a fan of this episode, and wants to make a statement and back up that statement. So let's hear from our Philly.
Okay.
Hey, what up, you guys? It's Philly, your new best friend, Rich Filiberto. Anyway, I'm going to try to be brief. I already sent Josh my 2,000-word dissertation on why I thought this was the worst-written episode of the series so far. But my thoughts about that have crystallized a little bit over the past couple of days. And what I've come to realize is my frustration is coming from a place where all of the ingredients were there for this to be an awesome episode of The Walking Dead. Everything about Daryl being at the kingdom is interesting. He's hanging out with Shiva. His reunion with Carol stood to be a high watermark for the series, let alone this episode. And I guess what I want to know from you guys is whether or not you share my frustration about this show not reaching its potential anymore. I mean, when The Walking Dead is good, it is really good. Some of these actors are incredibly talented people. They've given us a few really powerful performances along the way. We're super invested in these characters. And it just feels to me like fundamentally all the choices the writers made in this particular 43 minutes of television are blatantly inferior to the myriad of options they left on the table. I don't mean to be a total Debbie Downer. I'm super psyched to have you guys back talking about the show. As long as you're podcasting about it, I'm going to keep watching. But I'm just curious as to your thoughts. Thanks so much, guys.
All right. So a lot from our Philly. He's usually such a positive man. Was very, very let down by new best friend. Thinks new best friend is the worst episode of The Walking Dead.
No, it's not.
It was not long ago, Rob, that I said that the Tara episode, the Oceanside episode, that you could make the argument that that was the worst episode.
And that wasn't.
Probably not. Probably not. But you don't think that New Best Friend would qualify for that?
No, I mean, I think it was silly at times, but there were a lot of people that liked it. So if some people really did like it, it's definitely not the worst episode. Like, the worst episode of The Walking Dead has to be universally despised. And I would say that the reactions, at least the strong reactions that I've seen, are probably 50-50 or 40-60, whereas some people really liked it and some people were more in our camp and didn't love it. So I think that's a little bit of the hyperbole from our Philly. But I do think that he makes a very good point about the Daryl and Carol stuff that was so strong. I do think you probably could have, I would have been fine with an episode of Daryl and Carol's reunion.
You know, one thing about this episode that I really did appreciate, though, is that we got a bunch of A stories. I mean, the stories themselves may not have been A grade, but we got a main story involving Rick Grimes and a main story involving Daryl Dixon and Carol. And those are, you know, three of the very, very elite characters of this show. And so often Walking Dead will drill down into one specific corner of the universe for an entire episode, like Tara in Oceanside, or like, you know, Carl at the sanctuary, or whatever you want to say. And sometimes those episodes can be really frustrating because you're not getting the characters that you want to see. And one of the takeaways that you and I had from season one was how much fun it was to see like the whole group together, that it was really every episode you got everybody involved. And I liked that about this episode, that you really did. At least you got many of the key players that you really want to see in the same space. So I think that that was a plus. Like, I'd be interested in seeing the Daryl and Carol episode as well. But we've seen episodes like that before. And I think just as a, if not as a rule, then hopefully as something that they really are hoping to look to do more, is to bring as many of these main characters in the same episode as possible. I think that can only be good for momentum. So I'm happy about that at the very least, even if the execution wasn't great to my standards.
And the other shoe that has to drop, obviously, with the Daryl and Carol storyline is how will Carol ultimately find out about Glenn and Abraham? And then what is she going to eventually do about it?
Yeah, no, I think that that's going to be tough. I think that that's certainly going to be something that opens up at some point down the line. You know, you mentioned that other people really did like this episode as well. Just to give them their due, we certainly got people who enjoyed the episode who reached out to us. Jenny Girl, 1019, Walking Dead brought that levity back 2 weeks in a row. Such a good episode. They've won me back. So that's one person who I believe was down on the premiere. I might be speaking out of school there, who is now up on the show. So that's good. This from Tony Tenorio, who says, "What the hell happened to my beloved show? It was actually action-packed, had pretty good dialogue, and a cohesive story. I mean, seriously, guys, they actually answered all the questions and didn't leave any glaring plot holes. The character building was great, but the episode was never stagnant or boring. It had some super intense scenes and even tugged on my heartstrings. I really enjoyed when they deviate from the comic, so I have no idea what's coming. I'm super excited to hear what you guys think about it." Oh, wait, no, next episode is all Negan. Well, I guess we can't have great back-to-back episodes. So, you know, always looking for the dark lining in the silver cloud or something like that. But anyway, so we have people who liked the episode as well. So definitely fair to point out.
And on Sunday night, I was tweeting with Brian Ginelli. I don't know if you've ever met him at any of the stuff that you've done, but he works at Xfinity. He was saying he loved the episode. He really liked the new culture that they met. So some people, especially in the comments, they were really very much in favor of the garbage people. So yeah. I think that, you know, it was just some people liked it. Some people didn't.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's get into the garbage people. I think that, you know, we can't not talk about what was going on with all of the garbage people. We've got a voicemail that we can kick things off with here from Dutch Whiskey, has some thoughts about the development of these garbage people.
Rob, Josh, you asked for voicemails. I'm giving you voicemails.
Nice.
So here's my question. I know you guys got some concerns about the abnormal behavior by these scavengers. But here's what I got to say. They're living in a landfill. You know, they're breathing in methane. You know, their water's probably tainted with mercury. Their sorghum, their barley's probably contaminated. That explains a heck of a lot about the way they're talking with their up, up, up and their crazy clothes. All right, guys, you tell me what you think. I'm out, out, out.
Oh, my God. Well, what I think is that Dutch Whiskey has the voice of an angel, and that angel's name is Deanna Monroe.
Oh, wow.
That was beautiful. That was great. The Dutch Whiskey, Deanna Monroe voice. That should that's on Mount Rushmore.
Was Dutch Whiskey what Spencer was hiding in the floorboards at his house?
Yeah, I think that's probably right. Yeah, so what do you think? Like, just living in a landfill, this can't be good for the brain.
Yeah, yeah. I think that that's probably not great. So you think that there was some mutation that was caused by whatever garbage was in the dump?
Yeah, I think that that could certainly be a part of it. I mean, I don't understand the culture of the garbage people. I don't really get what's going on here. I don't know why they're speaking in tongues, why their language is so simplistic and everything. It's very strange. But that being said, and not to shill too hard, but my great editor, Leslie Goldberg at The Hollywood Reporter, did an interview with Pollyanna McIntosh, who, of course, plays the great Jadis, whose name I love so much. It sounds like Rudy trying to say Judith. He screws it up. Baby Jadis. She smells like trash, but she's good. But in this interview with Pollyanna McIntosh, she has a really interesting quote about the language of the trash people, which is, "The language and dialogue is a way to keep their group cohesive. This dialogue is one way to separate them from the outside and cement their community. It's very succinct, clear, and to the point. And as you can see from the heap and how all the trash is used, there's nothing that is wasted. In this case, it's the word. There's no need for extraneous words. It's just what you need and direct. The rest is just to be dropped back in the trash. It's also intimidating to outsiders and makes them that much more mysterious. Jadis keeps her cards close to her chest, and her dialogue is one of the ways she can do that." So that's at least Pollyanna McIntosh's explanation for the trash people's dialogue.
I feel like we're getting the metaphors confused here. Like, they live in the garbage dump, so they don't use any extra words because that would be creating waste, but they live in that. It just doesn't hold for me.
Well, the waste becomes like a barrier, like the, you know, their whole junk pile civilization is like walls built on waste. So that's what the trash heaps are for. And then when you're looking at like their weaponry and their armor and, you know, their other like ways of life, that's when I think she's talking about how there's an effective use of trash there.
Sure.
So that's what she means by not wasting trash. And then I think all the other extraneous stuff is just used for like wall packing.
Well, I think that if the metaphor was really going to hold up, since everything they do is stuff that they take out of the garbage that nobody else was using or people threw away and they try to make use of it, their entire language should be things that nobody says anymore, like things that we all stopped using. Like when Rick shows up, she should just be like, don't go there.
Talk to the hand.
What do you think? You're all that and a bag of chips, Rick?
Yeah, I doubt that they're really saying LMAO anymore in the Walking Dead universe.
So I think that that's what they should do is pick up all of the garbage that people threw away.
Yeah, no, I think that that's good. Some old timey talk. I don't know. I don't have like a good like like 1940s mobster term at the ready.
Well, that if they're yeah, whatever, they'll find it and they'll use it.
All right, yeah, just old tongues that they are going to bring back here. Anyway, that's not my explanation. That's Pollyanna McIntosh's explanation for the trash people's dialogue. She also has her own name for these people, by the way. I don't know if she mentioned it on The Talking Dead.
Oh, she did.
Oh, the heapsters?
Yeah.
Okay. Yes. Right. She talked about the heapsters.
Pollyanna McIntosh is really doing a lot of world building. Yeah. Like you would think that somebody would step in and like, all right, you know what? Like we'll write the show, Pollyanna. Thank you for, you know, we don't need you to write the encyclopedia of the garbage people at this point. I don't think any of this is canon.
The garbage people probably didn't have a lot to do on set.
She's writing her own Wikipedia page on this.
Yeah, just like, you know, like wallow around in garbage and wonder what they're called. So they went with the heapsters because they thought it sounded like saying hipsters with an accent.
Yeah.
So everyone hates heapsters, whether it's in Brooklyn or in the Walking Dead universe. This is from Laura. Laura.
Laura Winslow?
Laura Winslow. Laura.
Laura.
Yeah, I think that's right. Laura Winslow writes in. Yeah, Laura. I used to know a garbage man, and he always smelled really bad after work every day, though he showered twice a day and didn't smell after the shower. It was from hauling normal garbage, let alone stuff sitting around for months and months. So I can't imagine how these folks must smell living among garbage and rot. With a group smelling this bad, what do they need guns for? They could just walk into Negan's camp and people would go running or at least tear up and be blinded by their horrid smell.
That's hilarious.
Should we be weaponizing the scent of the heapsters?
Yes, they should be able to like put all of their like dirty laundry into like some sort of a cannonball and like throw it over the fence into the Savior's compound and like smoke them all out.
You think that it might be the least realistic thing that The Walking Dead has ever done, that literally nobody in Rick's group is just like puking from the stench of the heapsters?
No, because they take zombie guts and put them all over themselves often and they act like it's nothing.
Got it. So they're immune to bad smells at this point.
I think so. I think they're hard of smelling at this point.
You got to imagine that they would at least notice the smell.
Laura was not only concerned with the smell of the garbage people, that she might be our new cleanliness expert in the Walking Dead universe, because she also sent us this email, Josh.
Okay.
She said, in the beginning of the episode, when we see Daryl, he seemed clean and you could actually see his face. Though as he went along, he seemed to get dirtier and dirtier scene after scene. Just the walk to the archery field greased his hair immensely. I was so hoping for Carol to give him a bath after feeding him, but no. At that point, he was a dirty, stringy-haired mess. Though Rick, having been thrown down a cliff of garbage and forced to do battle with a pincushion and dump garbage on him himself, though sweaty and bloody, remained cleaner than Daryl. Why?
Well, who knows if he's cleaner than Daryl? This is from Brad Ass TV. Is anyone else worried that Rick now has tetanus?
Oh, that's a very good point.
I mean, you know, Rick might not be baseline as dirty as Daryl, but he's definitely dirty. And Winslow is definitely dirty. And he impales his hand on Winslow's spikes. Like there's definitely, he gets like cut on the thigh. This can't be good. That, I'm more worried about that. I also really have to say, Rob, the discovery of your Daryl Dixon impression is, what a treat. What a treat that is a thing that
exists. I don't know if it was from watching the first season and then jumping back to now, but Norman Reedus has become incoherent on the show. And I don't know if he's gone through so much with Negan. Yeah.
So, oh man, I can't tell you anything. I'm like, what?
Yeah.
Thank God I watched with the captions on.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, listen, when the group got to Alexandria for the first time, they were all very, very dirty. And then they cleaned up and Rick was clean shaven for a while and everyone got to shower and like really wipe the stench of the road off of themselves. Daryl never really did that. Like yeah. Daryl like still went straight back to like dirty biker mode. So he's just been accumulating filth ever since he's shown up on the show. I think maybe he showers at the CDC, but he really barely ever bathed himself.
Mm-hmm.
I think Alex really, you know, astutely pointed out that this is a man who had just been eating dog food sandwiches in a prison cell wearing the same off brown sweatsuit for the past like, however long he was in there and barely looks like he's showered then. So I think that I think he's just accumulating more and more filth. Like he has more garbage on his person than the garbage people have in the entire trash pile.
And also, I think that Daryl might have some sort of a issue with the heat because at the start of the episode, he's not even doing anything and he is like sweating bullets. Like there's like sweat dripping down his shirt.
It's glandular.
And he's just standing around.
His glands. It's not his fault.
I don't know. Maybe there's something wrong with Daryl.
Maybe he had medication that he was on before the apocalypse. And now that, you know, we're years past medication at this point, he just can't control it. Or this is just, you know, this is all very clever character building and foreshadowing on the writer's part because they eventually plan to make Daryl the king of the garbage people.
Oh, that's interesting. I was thinking that maybe is it all part of Daryl's plans to like cover himself with pheromones to befriend Shiva the tiger?
Ah, that could be it too. What do you think about the budding BFF ship between Daryl and Shiva the tiger?
Chris Hardwick had a funny line when he talked about how he was always saying that he hoped Daryl would never die, but he did for a second. We thought it would be funny maybe if Daryl, that's how he goes, that the tiger just gets him at the end of the episode.
I mean, that would be incredible. That would be, be one of the most frustrating moments in television history if that's how they took out Daryl Dixon, but it would almost be worth it just for the headline.
Where are we going with Shiva the tiger? I mean, we have Chekhov's tiger here. What happens with the tiger?
Well, I think that you can't put a tiger on a show that takes place in the zombie apocalypse without unleashing that tiger on some zombies at some point.
Sure.
So, like, I think we'll see Shiva in action at some point down the line, just a matter of when. You know, that's the big question with the kingdom. You know, we've plopped the kingdom into the universe of The Walking Dead, and so far they're doing diddly squat, except for Sir Richard, who really has this terrible plan to lead all of the saviors to Carol's house and get her killed and framed the saviors, like this real like Tony Vlachos level plan of how he's going to convince Ezekiel to go after the saviors. So no one really wants to do anything here other than that one guy. But you have to imagine that the kingdom is on the show because eventually they will be spurred to action, or many of the people there, or some of the people there at least, will be spurred into action. And I think Shiva's along for that ride. So the question of like, where are we going with Shiva is like a small subset of where are we going with the kingdom.
Shiva the tiger would have been a great pick in the death draft also.
Oh, yeah, just because the budget won't allow for more than one season of the CGI tiger. That's interesting. So I don't know where that's going to go. I think Daryl and Shiva, that could be a fun friendship. You know, Daryl's kind of a lone wolf. This is a lone tiger.
Sure.
Get a liger out of this. Napoleon Dynamite would be very happy.
Josh, do we have anything about the Daryl and Carol relationship? Because I'd like to talk about that scene that they had together.
Yeah, of course. We got a couple of questions about that. This one is from Vicky. Vicky was frustrated with the scene. Vicky writes in and says, I was frustrated that Daryl treated Carol like a frail woman. He should have told her about the murder and mayhem Negan and the saviors are involved in. Carol has a right to know. As I was watching, I knew before he spoke that he was going to lie to her. What if they come around to her? I think she should know what the saviors are up to and how dangerous they are. The writers have turned her character from a strong woman into a weak older lady. Everyone's gone through hell, probably more pain and heartbreak than her, yet she's still having a breakdown. I don't like this portrayal.
I love the interaction between Daryl and Carol, but I think you got to tell Carol what's going on. You can't let her just go on thinking like, oh, I can't wait to see Glenn because I have to tell him this really funny joke that I heard. How are we going to keep this charade up for so long? Do we have to have like some sort of like Weekend at Bernie's type Glenn person? Oh, Glenn's sleeping today, Carol. Don't bother him. He's sleeping in late night last night. Oh, where's Abraham? Oh, he's at the store. He'll be back in 10 minutes. Don't you worry about Abraham. Good old Abraham will be back any minute now.
I feel like that's going to be difficult to pull off, considering that Glenn and Abraham don't have heads anymore.
Yeah.
And that they've been buried for at least a week at this point. So that's going to be difficult to do the weekend at Glenn's. I think that that's going to be a challenge. And I also think that Carol and Daryl's, you know, reunion here, I think that the connotation that I got from it, at least, was that this was like their hello and goodbye. Like, this is not like, I'm not going to be coming around and bothering you anymore. I totally respect that you want to be on your own. So I don't think that, like, Carol's expecting to ever go and see Glenn again, or anyone else from Alexandria for that matter. I think that this was like the peaceful goodbye. All of your people are safe. Everybody's okay. We're going to take care of things. You stay here in your cottage and just live your life and be fine. I totally understand Daryl's desire to, like, give Carol some semblance of peace. I disagree with Vicky's statement that Carol has probably suffered less pain and heartbreak than most of the people around her. Carol has been through a ton.
Sophia.
You know, Sophia, she was in this horrible relationship with Ed, the stupid Ed. Like, she's been through a lot. She had to kill these kids, like, so many terrible things. She got kicked out of the group. It's been rough for Carol. So maybe, yeah, she does deserve to kick her feet up. So I get where Daryl is coming from on trying to give her that. That being said, Sir Richard has an active plan to kill Carol. Who knows if Daryl was able to get through to that guy? And also, totally, like, the danger element of not telling Carol what's really up with the Saviors. I'm like, yeah, just so you know, like, if the Saviors come around, get out of there. They're not good people. They might bash your brains in. They did that to Glenn and Abraham. It does feel like he's doing a disservice to Carol.
And not for anything, we're trying to build this coalition of all of these people. And couldn't we use Carol in this plan? Like, I know that Carol, and I did think it was a little bit forced in and shoehorned in, even though I liked the scene where Carol says, you know, oh, what? So is everybody okay? She's like, because you know me. If I find out that somebody killed one of my friends, I'm going to go crazy and I'm going to go out and I'm going to try to kill them. But just everybody's okay, right? I did feel like that is a very, very much too much exposition there with Carol. Like, we got it. Carol's going to go nuts. But if at the same time we are working on this plan, like, that Carol's going to be like another Rosita, where it's like, okay, Carol, I know you want to kill Negan today, but that we are working on this plan. Next week, we're going to kill Negan.
Yeah. I think the thing with this is, like, if you want somebody to tell Carol what's going on and convince her to join the war, Daryl's the wrong person to deliver that message. Because I think it's totally within character for Daryl to keep that from Carol and just want Carol to be off on her own. That's a Daryl move in terms of his relationship with Carol. If it was Rick, if it's Michonne, if it's Carl, if it's, like, anybody else from the group other than Daryl and basically Morgan, I think that they're telling Carol what happened and they're trying to convince her to come back. Daryl and Morgan are really the only two people that would want Carol to have this peaceful life for herself at all costs, even when the sky is falling all around them. So I think it's within character for Daryl to keep that from her. But that being said, I think it's a really curious writer's choice. I think it's not a great decision in the writer's room to take this character who, over the course of 7 seasons, you know, the entirety of Walking Dead, Carol has been a part of this thing and has really transformed into such an awesome, badass character from, you know, kind of really unassuming beginnings. And then to just really sideline her. And it's not even the sidelining of this, you know, of this part of her where she's really willing and capable and totally ready to do what she has to do to survive when push comes to shove. But I think that the actual sidelining her in terms of screen time, this is what, her like third episode that she's been in this season? Like, she's barely been on the show. And so to have her come back on the show this week in a pretty heavy way and to still keep her in the dark, so it's going to take however many more episodes to get her back in the good graces of everybody, to get her back on the hunt for the Saviors and everything like that, that's going to be like the season finale at this point. That's just a really crummy use of Carol, I think.
Yeah, Carol is great. And we need to get her back in the action.
ASAP. The sooner the better. So it's frustrating to have this scene with Carol and not get, you know, the information about Glenn and Abraham and everything to her. Because it would push her back on the path, you would think, to getting involved in this Savior conflict. But so much for that.
Yeah. And maybe she could like take like a Rosita or a Sasha or a Maggie under her wing in terms of, okay, you want to be the new female lead badass on this show? Okay, well, like, come train with me in my cottage for the season.
Right.
And we'll work on it. Yeah. I'll be the cheesemaker to your Morgan.
Yeah. The cheese Morgan. Yeah, I don't know. I'm frustrated that Carol's not more involved in the show right now. I think that that would be ideal. I think everyone would be happy.
Yeah, and we're not going to see her again for a couple of weeks.
That's the thing. It's like it'll take until like the end of the season for Carol to be like, yeah, I got to do this. I got to fight with you guys. It's like, of course you do. And we knew that from the beginning of the season. I can't believe it took us 16 episodes to get here. That's The Walking Dead, folks. This is from Morty. As of this episode, I feel sorry for Richard. Anytime he thinks he might be getting something going, it falls apart. He is Sir Charlie Brown, having the football constantly pulled out from under him. Do you think that that's a fair comparison? Is Sir Richard the Charlie Brown of The Walking Dead?
Yeah, that's funny. Do you think it's more likely that Sir Richard finally does get everything together or ends up dying for the cause?
I don't know. I just started thinking about how Pigpen must live with the heapsters. that's as far as I've gotten. I think that Richard's fate here is to, you know, he's certainly not going to survive for very long. This is a character who is designed to die on the show. I think that he is going to die in this conflict with the saviors. And the only question is, like, does he somehow convince everybody to come aboard while he's still alive and he gets to live to die another day? Or is it his death that will somehow catalyze the events? He seems to be willing to do that. Like, he seems to be willing to, you know, really do the suicide play in order to convince the kingdom into action. He says, I'm willing to die for the kingdom.
Daryl said basically, like, so go do it.
Go do that.
So, you know, he might take Daryl's advice. We don't know. It's not impossible. I could really see Sir Richard like doing some sort of suicide play in order to convince the kingdom to go after the saviors.
So we'll see if he tries to have a different target to frame for a murder. Like, would you think that he could potentially like set up something to kill Benjamin where then like, oh, saviors did it, like basically like just shift the target.
Right. And then like he gets found out and like Morgan ices him or something like that.
We could see it. I could see it.
Yeah, I could see it. I could see it.
So are you excited for the Negan standalone episode? I know that you're not as high on Negan as I am.
No, but I love Eugene. I do love Eugene. So I'm really excited to see how Eugene intersects with the saviors and how all of that goes down. I got to imagine it's going to be a very different experience from what Daryl went through with the saviors. Like, I feel like Eugene is going to be much readier to play ball with these guys.
Yes or no? Over under. Half a time we hear the song Easy Street.
Oh, God.
Is Eugene in the cell listening to Easy Street? Yes or no?
Oh, my God. Yeah, I think like if it's gun to my head, are we getting a scene of Eugene in Easy Street? Yeah, you have to imagine that's happening. You can't like we can't go back to the saviors and not hear Easy Street.
Okay. Is Eugene eating a dog food sandwich?
Yeah, but with relish, probably. You know, he's going to really enjoy that thing. Maybe perhaps literally with relish.
And does Eugene get to watch an episode of Who's the Boss?
Yeah, definitely. 100%. Yeah. No, he gets to go through the whole routine. He gets to really have a day.
Good. Good. You know what? We haven't seen Negan yet in this half season. I'm ready for some Negan.
Ho! I am too, actually. I think, you know, the two-episode break, I appreciate getting some distance away from Negan. I think Negan is a character best used sparingly, and he was all over the first half of the season, so I think that was probably a big part of my issue. I loved him when he was eulogizing Fat Joey on the radio. So, I don't know. I feel like we've talked about this before, too, of, like, the potential of the scenes between Negan and Eugene. That's pretty high. So, I'm open-minded to it. I'm open-hearted to it. You know, that's kind of where I am with Walking Dead right now. I'm just taking it as it comes, Rob.
Josh, do we have a hashtag today?
Hashtag today. Do you got any options written down?
Only cup of tea dog.
Cup of tea dog. I'll never turn down a cup of tea dog.
Yeah, it's delicious.
Yeah, so why don't we go there? Let's do that.
All right, so Sunday night, you, myself, Alex Kidwell will be talking about episode number 3, I guess technically episode number 11 of the season. And it'll be the all Negan-centric Saviors episode that we've been waiting for in this back half of the season. So I am very much looking forward to that. Hopefully it delivers, Josh.
All right, we'll see. We'll just have to see. As long as there's no trash people, I'm good.
Okay, we'll see. I think we're going to be off from the trash people for a little bit.
When's the next time we're checking in with Jadis?
I think that at least, is there something else that we could check in with? I mean, could we maybe get the Hilltop episode 4? Yeah. And not see the trash people where, yeah, Daryl said he was going to the Hilltop. So check in with Maggie, Sasha, Daryl, Jesus, maybe, and Gregory in episode 4.
Oh, my God. So we're really just going to get like the mirror image of the first half of the season. Sounds great. Into it.
Although we may end up like going to Oceanside at some point.
Oh, good.
To
great.
To get those,
yes,
guns.
Yeah. Really tantalized me there. I'm in. I'm feeling excited.
Yeah, make the garbage people not seem so bad.
I still really just can't believe they went back to garbage. It's incredible.
Incredible. All right. You can follow Josh Wiggler on Twitter. He's at Round Howard. I'm at Rob Sisterino. Take care, everybody. Have a good one. Bye.